chapter 30, beginning with verse 18. Tuesday, I thought maybe the session was a little bit more for the young people, although it could benefit us. Today, I think probably it's a little bit more for us, even though it can benefit the young people. I'd like for you to keep in mind some of the things we're going to cover. Yes, keep them in mind of being able to teach them to the younger, but those of you that are married or in those kind of relationships, we're going to be covering probably some things that are as practically important to you and I as anything I will cover this week. Proverbs chapter 30, verse 18. There are three things which are too wonderful for me, yea, four which I cannot understand. The way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent upon a rock, the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a maiden. So apparently we're dealing with something that's not easy to understand. And if you're married, you can relate to that. We get to know our mates very, very well, and yet we're different. We get very close to our mates, and yet they're of a different gender, they're of a different composition, they are different emotionally, physically, and we don't always understand that. One of my favorite sayings that kind of, well, I guess I have two of them, and I'm going to share them with you. One of them is by a man by the name of David Barry. And he wrote a very short line, and he wrote down what women want. Women want to be loved, they want to be listened to, they want to be desired, they want to be respected, they want to be needed, they want to be trusted, and sometimes they just want to be held. And then he wrote down what men want. Men want tickets to the World Series. My other favorite saying along this line came from a man by the name of Charlie Shedd, which you may or may not have read any of his writings. He was writing about marriage before it was a big market. Now there's just a glut of material out there. Some of it's trash and some of it has some good things, and I've tried to take some good things from some of it. But Charlie Shedd was writing on this back in the late 60s. I'm not sure, he may well be dead now. I'm not really sure whether he's still alive. But in the early 70s, he'd been married 44 years. And he was describing in one of his writings a little argument that he and his wife had had. Now, they'd been married 44 years and had a good marriage. But they had an argument, I guess, and didn't get resolved that day. So he woke up the next morning, and his wife had left to go to the grocery store, and he found a note on the refrigerator, and it said the following: "Dear Charlie, I hate you. Love, Martha." And that's a little bit of the paradox that sometimes couples find themselves in. Not that we really hate one another, but we don't always understand one another. I covered some of this material one time at a congregation in Missouri, and I had several people come up, and I thought this was an appropriate comment. It was, "I wish someone would have gone over this before we got married or earlier." And this was not by people that had bad marriages, it's just by people that it helps us understand some of the reasons and some of the things that go on if we can understand some of the basic differences between men and women. And that's what I'd like to attempt to do in some fashion this morning. Some of this will seem a little lighthearted, and that's probably good, because the more serious the material, sometimes that's a way of approaching it. Not all of this is certainly new to me or from me. There's some good writers on this, and I can't articulate all of them. There are some bad writers. Some of the better writers on this particular subject, in my experience, is a man by the name of John Trent, if you've ever read any of his writings, and a couple, Les and Leslie Perrott, who have done some fairly good writings on this, if you want to consider that later. But the whole purpose of this is to give us better understanding of one another, better understanding of our mates, and better understanding of how to make our marriages better. And I think one of the keys to having a good marriage is to understand that you and I, all of us, men and women, need to appreciate and honor our mates. Now, I don't think there's anybody here this morning that wouldn't say they don't appreciate their mates. And I doubt there's very few, if any, of us that would say we don't want to and don't intend to honor our mates. But saying that and doing that are not always the same thing. Because most of us bring to our marriages ideas about what a marriage ought to be based upon what we've observed. We've observed our parents. Some of you had parents with good marriages. Well, you take from that what a good marriage is. Some of you had parents that had bad marriages. You take from that, by default, what a bad marriage might be, and therefore what a good marriage might be. Some of us grew up in homes that had little love. Others grew up in homes that had a lot of love. Some grew up in homes where dad was present. Others grew up in homes where dad was absent. Some of you grew up in homes where mom was domineering. Others of you grew up in homes where mom was extremely passive. And your mate may have had, and probably did have, different experiences with you than you did. Therefore, you both come to this institution of marriage with a little different concept of what a good or a bad marriage is. It's not uncommon, for instance, for young men who are raised in a family where the woman is domineering to seek out women that will be domineering, because that's their image of what a good marriage is. Men often resort to the things dad did. Women often resort to the things that mom did. And sometimes it just takes a while to get on the same wavelength. Men, if you ever come home from work and you can just feel in the air or see in your wife's expression that something's just not right, and then you ask them that profound question like, what's wrong? And they give you a profound answer like, nothing. Well, you learn that nothing doesn't always mean nothing. There is nothing, and then there is nothing. Now, you may not understand that, but that's part of the differences between men and women. I believe that one of the biggest complaints, according to research, that wives have about their husbands, and this is in society, not just in the church, is that oftentimes wives feel replaced by something else. We go through this dating period and we men treat these women as if they are the absolute most important thing in the world to us. And I think that's probably the way most of us felt then and still feel. But once we settle down into life, if you will, sometimes other things, hobbies, sports, work, TV, begin to portray a replacement. And this is one of the things that women complain most frequently about. Now, I believe in order to have a good marriage, and I'm going to speak right now from the male perspective, but you could reverse this. I believe in order to have a good marriage, it's important that you are not number one to your mate. If you are number one to your mate, you probably will not have as good a marriage as you will want. And let me explain that, if I could use the board just briefly. It's what I call the slanted chair. And let's say this is you, male or female, and this is your mate. And in this scenario, your mate places you as number one. But there's another scenario in which your mate places Christ as number one and you as number two, hence the word the slanted chair scenario. If you are number two in your marriage under that scenario, you will be higher than if you are number one under the scenario to this side. So I am not at all upset that I am not number one in my wife's life, because I contend that I am more valuable to her and more appreciated by her and more honored by her by being number two to Christ than I would ever be by being number one without Christ. And that goes back again a little bit to that selection process, doesn't it? I didn't know that was in here. Where's Dave? That's my dad. I like that. It's not in my notes. Huh? Well, friends in the singular, I think. You had to be here to appreciate that. And that may not have been enough. Okay. Very good. Makes me feel loose. I've been stiff all week. Okay, stereotypes we learn. The concept here is that we enter life with stereotypes. We enter marriage with stereotypes. You entered your marriage with a stereotype of what a good husband and a good wife was, based upon your observations, probably of your family, but maybe of others that you took into strong consideration. And that's not wrong. The point being is that many times these stereotypes are wrong, and even if they're not wrong, they may not be right for you and your mate, because each husband and each wife, I believe, forms a new family unit, and there are basic principles in the Bible that we are to build that on, but yet my relationship with my wife and Mike's relationship with Kathy are different. I hope they're both based on biblical principles, but what would work for them doesn't necessarily work for me. Lots of times young people enter into marriage or the dating process with the stereotype that they have to be totally authoritative over their wife. You know that old adage, if you give your wife an inch, she'll become the ruler. That's not true. But yet we hear that. We have stereotypes about driving. You know, the guy who said, if you don't like my wife's driving, stay on the sidewalk. Well, men have more accidents than women. But we have stereotypes. And sometimes these stereotypes cause us to have difficulty in our relationships. I think one of the keys in a good marriage is that we honor and appreciate one another. I'm going to give you three scriptures. I don't know if I'll turn to them. I've turned to some of them. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. The husband is told to honor his wife. Absolutely. 1 Peter 3 and 7. Proverbs chapter 31, verses 12 and verses 25 tell the wife to honor her husband. The husband's to honor his wife. The wife's to honor her husband. And in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1, the children are to honor their parents. So if you've got a family unit, a husband, a wife, a mother, father, and children, and they're all honoring and appreciating one another, then you've got the lubricant that will make it work. Now, what does it mean to honor one another? Well, it manifests itself in many activities, but I think in its basis form, honor means to attach high value to that person and show it. When you look at your husband or your wife, it would be great if over their forehead you saw, even though it won't be visible to anyone else, the word valuable. And that leads us to honor. Honor is an area that our country greatly lacks today. Not just in marriage, just period. The Oriental cultures or the Asian cultures, and I mean this with great appreciation because I really, really respect this, have a better history of honoring one another. You know, the bowing and the honor that they show to the senior people of the family or of the community. My understanding is that many of these cultures are getting away from that, and that's to their detriment, and they understand that. We're Americanizing them, and I guess in some sense, and it's to our shame. The church, the family, society needs to have honor. And when a society begins to dishonor itself, then you start seeing things like abortion, euthanasia, and the disintegration of the home. All of those are indications of dishonor. If we honored life, we wouldn't abort. If we honored life, we wouldn't have euthanasia. If we honored one another, we would be closer to what Brother Roger described in the Philippines. We would not have divorce and dissolution of marriage. And when people feel needed and valuable, they tend to respond better. I don't think we should honor one another to be manipulative, but if you want someone to respond to you, you honor them. You show them that they're appreciated. And you express it. Do we honor our mates? Or how do we honor our mates? I believe the attitude of honoring our mates goes a long way towards solving problems in a marriage. Okay, let me see what number slide I'm on. Men and women are different. Now that's really got to be a profound statement. Some of you spent a lot of time and money to get here just so I could tell you that. And if I'd charged you, you'd be asking for your money back. You may still ask for your money back. But bear with me just a little bit, because that is such an obvious statement. It just amazes me as I've studied this and learned to appreciate this concept more, how much we miss this concept in practical applications to our marriage. Now, my entire purpose here is simply to get us to understand our marriages better so that we can perform better in our marriages. And these differences, as I go through some of them are going to be physical, some of them are going to be emotional. I don't see in any case where one is better than the other. That's not the issue. It's not the issue that the differences women have are better than the differences men have or vice versa. I see many characteristics of men and women in God. It's as if he took all the good ones and put them in himself, and then sometimes we take different ones. But there's none of these I'd want us to do without. It's just important to understand them. Now, to begin this concept, I want to just look at a few brief physical differences between men and women. Now, I know you know the obvious ones, the reproductive ones. Those I'm not particularly concerned with. But let me share with you that every cell in your body is different from every cell in your wife or husband's body, by definition. If Brother Campbell was here, he could articulate on that profusely, if I understand his area of expertise. But every cell in your body, as a woman, is different from every cell in your husband's body. And that manifests itself in some important ways. For instance, women have a better immune system than men. It's just proven. In the World War II concentration camps, women survived concentration camps at a much higher rate than men did. They didn't get sick. They didn't die nearly as much. Men, on the other hand, are stronger than women. The average man has 1.5 gallons of blood. The average woman has 4/5 gallons of blood. Now, those are averages. The average man, therefore, has more red blood cells to take oxygen to his muscles. Therefore, he tends to be able to do more physical work. Another physical difference between men and women, approximately 40% of a man's cells are muscle cells. Approximately 20% of a woman's cells are muscle cells. That doesn't make him better, it just makes a difference. And I really believe that's what Peter was referring to when we have that reference to the weaker vessel. Not better or worse, men just have more muscles. Now there's all kinds of outgrowths of this. Men can lose weight quicker than women. That's a fact. And the reason for it is they have more muscle cells, because muscle cells burn off more energy. Women, that's not an excuse to let yourself go. But it is an understanding of a difference between men and women. It's easier for women to gain weight and it's harder for them to lose weight. Men tend to have thicker skin and heavier bones. Women, you'll like this one. A man's skull is thicker than a woman's skull. Now that's an anatomical fact. Now you women knew that all along, you just didn't understand the science behind it. I know, but that's true. A few days after conception, a chemical is released that has an effect on the mind or the male or the brain cells of young boys. Some women jokingly say that men are brain damaged, but that's not true. It's just that we are different. It's just that we are different. And one of the manifestations of this, and just bear with me for a couple of more minutes, because where we're going is very important to marriage, is, and you may have heard these concepts, men tend to be, and I hope that's the next one. Yeah. Men tend to be left brain oriented and women tend to be right brain oriented. Now there are exceptions to this, but in general, men tend to do most of their mental work on the left side of the brain, and women tend to be a little more bivalent. Even though they're a little more right-sided, women tend to be able to go back and forth. And the left side of your brain is a very factual-oriented type of side of the brain. That's where we get our language. That's where we get our logic. That's why men tend to gravitate toward mathematical and engineering careers. Now, there are some women that can excel in those, but men tend to graduate toward that, whereas women will tend to gravitate toward English or the social sciences and various studies like that. One is not better than the other, they're just different. Now, there are exceptions to this. I know, I can think of couples where it just looks like it's reversed, and if you're in a relationship like that, that's not wrong, that's just you. But I'm talking in average. Men tend to be more factual, more logical, and more task-oriented. Women tend to be more compassionate. They tend to feel deeper. They tend to be more poetic and musical. They're more inclined to enjoy hugging and touching. Now, those are important concepts for a marriage, I believe. I gave the girls one with the thicker skull. I'll give the men one now. Little girls, even before they're born, they have done some studies on sonograms, and the upper lip of a little girl is moving in the womb much faster than the upper lip of a little boy. Need I say more?
No.
Need I say more? But let me just pursue that thought for a little bit, because that has caused marriages to fail. Not what goes on in the womb, but a misunderstanding of that concept. And let me take that to a practical standpoint. Women verbalize about twice as much as men do. You pick a number. If the average woman speaks 25,000 words a day, the average man speaks about 12,000 words a day. Now, what impact can that have on a marriage? Well, let me tell you one. The man goes out in the workplace and he's surrounded by people all day. And he spends all day communicating to those people. He comes home and he's used 11 of his 12,000 words up. The woman's been home with the children and she's only used 5,000 of her 25 up. She's got 20,000 to go. He's got 1,000 to go. She wants to visit. He just wants to grunt his way through the evening. And if you don't understand that, that can cause stress on a marriage. It's humorous, and that's okay, but it's serious, too. Just understanding that. Now, there are exceptions, but there are few. And the words that a man does speak, a man tends to speak three times more words in public than he does in private. A woman will tend to speak three times more words in private than she does in public, and that just exacerbates this problem even more, doesn't it? Okay, I need to move on. And that's probably good. There it is. I lost my place. Okay. The next few slides I want to give you are now some practical results of what I've just touched on. If you want to study the differences between men and women more, I can give you some material. Some of it you'll find interesting, some of it you might not. But I need to move on now to about five different sets of contrasts. And I think we've got these in your notebook. All of what I've described is part of the reason why men tend to want to discover and express facts. Remember, that left side of the brain is the logical, factual, engineering side of the brain. Women, on the other hand, tend to want to express emotions and intuition. Now, which is better? There is no better. We need both. Now, we may have some single parents here. I don't know. Probably in a group this size we do. And we'll talk about parenting next week. And I think you can successfully parent singularly. But some of the things I'm going to be telling you is why even the best single parent can't do as good a job as a team working well together, because God never designed it to be that way. That doesn't mean if you're a single parent, you can't be a good parent. And I have great admiration for those of you that have accomplished that. But it is harder because you don't bring as much. Men tend to be fact-oriented. Women tend to be a little bit more emotion-oriented. Women tend to be a little spatial-oriented. Spatial, not spatial, but spatial, S-P-A-T. And this isn't bad, but husbands, you ever been driving with your wives or with another woman, and all of a sudden you hear this eek? And you look up, and oh, maybe a block and a half away, there's something in the road. And you say, well, good grief, I've got plenty of time. Women tend to have less ability to make that spatial orientation as a man does. Okay? It's just something you have to understand. Don't get mad at her for eeking, because she's going to keep doing it. And don't get mad at her for pumping on the floorboard for the brake, because she's going to keep doing it. You just need to understand this. But I know husbands that have really gotten upset because they took it. My wife doesn't trust me to get us there safe. Now, maybe she does or maybe she doesn't, but don't jump to that conclusion. Please.
My wife did that to me once, and I said, you keep doing that, because one of these times I won't see it.
Sure. My wife's done that a couple of times this week. But I always tell her I saw it. No, I try to tell her the truth. I try. Okay, let's move on. That's the first set. Next set. Men need solutions. Remember, this is that logical fact-finding part of a man. Women are more inclined to give sympathy and compassion. Now, let me give you an example of an impact in a home, and I'll use our home as an example. We have two sons, relatively grown, but when they want to just talk about something, who do you think they go to? They go to the kitchen, where that's mom. Now, if they're really in a bind and they need a solution, then I get to join in the conversation. But if they just really want to talk, they're much more inclined to go to Donna than me, because they know I can't stand just talking. I want to solve the problem. And sometimes they don't want someone to solve the problem. They just want someone to bounce it off of. Husbands, remember this. Sometimes your wife will come and talk to you, and she may want you to solve a problem, but probably more times than not, she doesn't want you to solve it. She just wants to bounce it off of you and let her talk about it. And boy, it takes a long time to learn that, doesn't it, guys? What are we still talking about? We've been talking 20 minutes. I solved it 10 minutes ago, and I'm missing the whole point. Now, we kind of chuckle about this, but marriages go down the tubes simply because we don't understand these differences. Okay. Men tend to be more objective. Women tend to be more personal. Now, there's all kinds of illustrations. And again, this all hovers around some of those differences I gave you. A lot of you men enjoy watching football or basketball or baseball on TV. I do. I just love that. That's relaxing for me. In general, women don't enjoy doing that. They don't understand why we sit in that recliner and can watch 14 hours of football every New Year's Day. Or whatever it is. But have you ever noticed how interested women are in Little League? I used to coach Little League, and it was the mothers that got most involved in that sport. Now, what's the difference? The difference is men are interested in who wins and loses. Women are interested in who's playing. Husbands, if you want to get your wives interested in the Super Bowl, give them some personal information about the players. Tell them that Barry Sanders would never be in the Super Bowl, I guess, but pick someone. Troy Aikman, tell them about how many kids he has. And then when the football game's on, say, hey, that's a guy that's got three kids. And she's much more likely to stop and listen. It's just a difference between men and women. That's one of the reasons why women don't like to hunt. Men view hunting as conquering, and that's what we like to do. We're task-oriented. A woman, to shoot Bambi is just... it's more than she can do. A man can shoot Bambi and stick his head on the wall and look at it every day. Doesn't faze him. This has to do with shopping. Have you ever wondered why a man can walk 7 miles on a golf course and never stop, and he goes 100 yards in a shopping mall and he has to sit down and take a break? It has nothing to do with physical. It has to do with our mindsets. Okay, because a woman looks at shopping as a relational thing. Well, let's go look for a while, and then let's have coffee, and then let's visit, and then let's go look some more. A man says, let's go, let's get it, and let's get home. It's a hunting expedition to a man. Okay? Now, again, I'm not trying to be overly flippant, but if we understand these differences, not especially when we're young. If we just understand these differences, it's going to help us a tremendous amount, I believe. Here's one. Men more easily separate themselves from their surroundings. And it's much harder for a woman to do this. Now, this has some real practical implications, husbands. For you just to, if you work in an office, just to come in and say, oh, by the way, honey, and it's now 5 o'clock, I invited so-and-so over to the house this evening. That's just a nice, cordial hospitality for you, but for her, it takes on a whole different connotation because she takes great pride and self-esteem from that home. Therefore, it needs to maybe be more clean to satisfy her than it does for you. To me, I'm oblivious to things like that, but women aren't. I'm oblivious to a point. I guess at some point I would. A woman gets her self-esteem many times out of her home and how it looks, because that's a reflection on her, whereas a man gets his self-esteem maybe out of his job. That's why it's much more traumatic for a man to lose a job than it is for a woman, because his self-esteem is tied in. That's why it's much more traumatic for people just to drop in and the house is a little messy. I can't remember ever going into a couple's home and the man apologizing because of the clutter. And I can't hardly remember going in when the woman didn't, even if it was spotless. Even if it was spotless, they're always, and that they're not wrong, it's just different. It took me a while to grasp that. And I hope she'll allow me to share this. If she doesn't, you'll know by tomorrow. But one of the things Donna and I have tried to do, and she's been a tremendous help to me, is we try to have all of the members that want to in our congregation in our home once a year. Now, that's not all that hard, but it does take work. But when we were first married, every time we'd invite someone over, it was spring house cleaning all over again. And I kind of got to the point, I said, if you're going to clean every time, we're going to quit having company. Well, I had to back off that because that wasn't fair to her. You just have to understand the differences. That's what I'm saying. If you ever stay in a motel room, some of you women probably make the bed before you leave. And you know the maid's coming in and going to strip it right down, but you want people to think you're neat and tidy. I guess I don't have that fault. Okay. Men tend to generalize things and women tend to be more detailed. Let me just comment on that. You ladies have a tremendous capacity to remember certain things. My wife could probably tell you what we were wearing 10 years ago to the day. I couldn't tell you what I was wearing last week. One's not better, it's just a difference of priorities. Women have a great and natural desire to have a great relationship. Last Tuesday, I talked about expectations, and that's why I believe, especially as I talk to the young people, but I talk to you in the same way. Women have a higher potential to have false expectations from a marriage. And sometimes, I'm not talking about compromising principles, I'm talking about looking at life realistically. Ladies, your knight in shining armor, sometimes that shining armor is going to turn to pewter. And it's just not always going to be ideally. Now that's an excellent goal. But men view things so much different than women. Now I'd like to pause and ask you three questions. And then I'll let you ask some questions of your own. And make any comments you might like to make. And you can do this mentally. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best marriage possible for you to have, and 1 being the worst, what kind of marriage would you like to have? 10 being great and 1 being terrible, what kind of marriage would you like to have? Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume most people are up in the 8, 9, and 10 bracket. Okay, number 2. How would you rate your marriage right now? How would you rate on a scale of 1 to 10 your marriage right now? Now, I'm not going to have you do this, but if you're confident and comfortable in your marriage, later, when I'm not around, you and your mate share the numbers of how you rate your marriages, because 9 times out of 10, a man will rate it higher than a woman. It's very typical that a man will put 7, and a woman will put 4, and a woman will see that 7, and she'll say, "What do you mean a 7? And he'll say something like, "Well, you've got a garbage disposal, and you've got a freezer, and you've got an ice maker. What more do you want?" I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek, but it's back to how we look at things different. Men tend to look at things, and women tend to look at relationships. But how do you rate your marriage? I don't really care. The third question, and this is not something we'll do here, is to make a list of what you need to do to get the number that you put under 2 up to the number you put under number 1. If you want a 10, and you're at a 6, what do you need to do to move from a 6 to a 10? And that can happen at any age. Now, many times we have people in the church, and I know we have them here today, who have been married 40, maybe 50, 60 years, and we celebrate those anniversaries. And that's great. We need more of that. But I am not interested in longevity of a marriage. What I'm really interested in is the quality of that marriage. And if the quality is there, the longevity will happen. But it's possible to live together for 50 or 60 years in a bad marriage. I commend you for sticking it out, but that's not what God has in mind for you, and it's not what you deserve. So there's work to to be done. Okay, let me pause. We've got about 10 minutes and I can cover some other material, but let me pause and see now if you have any comments or questions or your experiences that would help. Michael.
I find your first question kind of interesting. Why would anyone not want to sin?
Okay. Well, I guess if I ask that, I will know who didn't put 10 down, won't we? Well, I know you all put 10, but why might someone not put a 10?
Because they don't have high expectations.
Okay, they don't have high expectations. Okay.
Realistic.
Pardon?
They're being realistic.
They're being realistic? There you go. I like all of them, but usually if we don't have a good self-esteem of ourselves, then that tends to make us think our marriage can't be as good as somebody else's. It's not that you don't want it, it's that you just don't think you can attain it, and therefore rather than put a goal out there that you think's unattainable, you lower your expectations. It's kind of like that plaque that reads, avoid disappointment, aim low. And a lot of people live their lives like that, never reaching their potential for Christ or in the home or in the workplace because they don't want to be. Some people come out of homes where they're just pounding into their head. They're not very good. And you're lucky to have what you got. Well, maybe you are, but boy, we've all got so much potential. Did you have a thought on that, Mike? It's a great question. It's hard for us to understand maybe why, but I think that's some of the reasons.
I'm assuming in the way you're asking the question, too, we're talking about things that are under our control.
I don't know that my question it was exclusively that.
Well, for instance, some people have a serious illness in the relationship, and they feel that and it's going to be long-term kind of thing. They feel that they, this is a permanent situation, unresolvable, and therefore that will restrict the ability of the relationship.
Okay, could you all hear Mike? He's talking about maybe a long-term illness or handicap in the relationship would restrict it. I understand what you're saying, and I know some people would think that way. I can sure make a good argument that those things have nothing to do with the quality of the relationship and may in fact allow that relationship to be better.
That's why I'm thinking we're really talking about things that we can't control rather than the situation.
Certainly in the second part I was, because I said what can you do to elevate it, and that has to be things within our control. But I think that's an important thing for us to keep in mind. Illness can happen, and that's when we say for better or for worse. But some of the best marriages I've seen have one or two of the partners with some kind of physical or emotional difficulty. I'm not glad they have it, but those things do happen. Leah. Sure, absolutely. The solution in society is, her question was, understanding these differences, how do you mesh them into a good relationship? Great question. We're going to spend quite a bit of time tomorrow on that, but I don't want to put that off. Let me give you a preview to at least some of my thinking on that. I think step number one is just understanding the differences, because until you understand them, you're just going to be shaking your head. Why are they like that? And women will come to the conclusion, he doesn't talk at night because he doesn't like me anymore. He doesn't love me. And just understanding that he may have used up 95% of his vocabulary for the day and cut the guy some slack leads to some patience. And then on the other side of the coin, men understanding that women are sometimes craving adult conversation and their husband's as close as they can get to it. So you need to sometimes listen. Each couple works this out, and I could give you all kinds of personal things that haven't worked for me, but I don't think I need to embarrass myself further. But just understanding them is part of it, and then being willing to give, and the husband loving the wife and the wife loving the husband, to be able to compromise on some of these issues. But just understand, you know, I believe there are some husbands and some wives who believe their mates lay awake at night trying to think up things that irritate them. And that's not necessarily the case. It could be, but it's not necessarily the case. It may just be these differences. Now, having said that, when I talk to the young people, what I want them to do is to have some of these things in mind during the dating process. Find out about these things after we're married. And to some extent, you can only find some of these things out after they're married. But tomorrow, I want to talk about nurturing this relationship and how to encourage our mates so that that relationship is stronger. So we'll go into more detail on that tomorrow, I hope. Yes, ma'am.
I think theoretically, if you have two people that are practicing Christianity, there will be good marriage.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Because each is crying. But what happens when the words you say mean something different to you than they do to your spouse?
Okay, her comment was, if you have two people that are practicing Christianity, you will, in general, have a good marriage. And I agree with that, because you've got two people that are loving and submitting. And I've yet to see a divorce where both parties loved and submitted to each other. Now, it takes two. You can do love and submit, and your partner may not. But I've never seen a divorce when both partners do that. And then her question was, well, what do you do when the words you say mean something different to the person hearing them? Well, I think we're into the area of communication, and we'll talk more about that next week. But you need to be able to sit down and maybe define your terms so that they begin to mean the same thing to both. But I've seen marriages where they're just on such different wavelengths that it seems almost impossible for them to communicate. And once you get into a real communication faux pas, your marriage is in serious jeopardy at that point. That's not a very encouraging answer. But if we can't understand what each other is saying, then we can't communicate. And if we can't communicate, I don't know how to have a relationship. Now, maybe someone would like to comment on that question differently, but communication is one of the great keys, and we haven't even hardly touched on that. That's why I believe if you don't marry in the church, at least marry someone who's in the same spiritual page that you are, because if you go out and pick someone that doesn't even believe in God, and then you try to talk to them about faith and loving him as Christ, I mean, how do you talk to someone that doesn't believe in God about those things? There's no common reference point. There just absolutely isn't. Yes?
I'd just like to comment back to what Leah was saying. I did that with Vince. He would come home, and I would jump on him. I would want to talk to him so bad. And I found that when I started to understand him and gave him some slack, maybe I would go out in the garden and work and give him a little bit of time to unwind, he started to understand me. And say, oh, she needs to talk to me. And so he began to understand me better when I understood him better.
Okay, that sounds logical to me. Let me make a comment on that, and I'm not pro women working outside of the home. I think if at all possible, especially when there are young kids, be at home. But women, you should have some other adult contact. And I don't care if that takes the form of girlfriends or PTA or what, but I think you benefit from having some other adult contact. And maybe that turns into part-time jobs as the children get older. I'll leave that to your discussion. But don't get yourself in a position. I don't think it's healthy to get yourself into a position where your husband is your only real other adult contact. Because you have a far greater need to communicate than that. Mike, did you have a comment?
Back to your suggestion that husbands and wives marriage. I think it also might be interesting if you have children who are old enough to give an honest evaluation, to have them rate your marriage and see where that fits in too. And very often, they're in a position to be a biased third party.
Okay, my children will never be old enough. I got to tell you this. My youngest one, some of you know Shane. He won't be here this week. Brandon will be, or next week. But an example of this in our relationship, when I go on a trip, it's not a trip. It's a task. And I want to get there as quick as I can, and the family keeps wanting to stop at these rest stops and all this kind of stuff. And all I can see is these cars whizzing by that I've passed, and I'm not going to win. Well, we went to the San Diego Zoo a few years ago, and the boys were probably 10. And my approach then to the San Diego Zoo is drink all the fluids you can before we get there, because I'm not about to pay $3 for Coke once we get there. So I was just chugging along, sloshing, and Shane gets thirsty. But he knows better than to ask me for a Coke. So he goes up to his mom and he says, you think Camel Man will ever get thirsty? He saw this big hump on my back that I'd poured fluids into. So that's kind of been our family joke ever since. So Donna comes over in her wisdom and shares that with me, and next thing you know, I'm buying a $3 Coke for the family. With four straws, though. See, my approach to going to the zoo is totally different than theirs. I mean, and I wasn't trying to dehydrate them. It just didn't seem necessary to me. And there I was, not being a very sensitive husband or father. So just forget I told you that. I know what's going to be up here now. I should never have done that. Leah, I'm counting on you. Dave.